We're going to review briefly, just to the overview of what the Balamor and the Mahama said up until the last point, and then we'll read actually the end of the Ramban, which is what he says more or less in the Chidushim. So the Balamor argued, what?
More.
Well, each one actually has different. One he has each in each part. One something he doesn't say in the other one, which is helpful, I think, actually.
I found this one way more.
In the Mechamos. Okay, right. He spelled, I guessed correctly when I read the Chidush and what I said about the business of the Ksuba that he writes for the Chiresh Shota, but he spells it out here. So the Balamor had said that when the Gemara answered Haram and Gamliel, Harabi Yeshua, Rabban Gamliel, the Machlokas really is whether or not there is such a thing as a Cheskas Aguf that matters. Cheskas Aguf for Besula. So Rabban Gamliel says that the Cheskas Aguf matters. Rabbi Yeshua says there's almost, he says, there is no Cheskas Aguf. Thus, Rabbi Gamliel believes two things. Number one, and then Balamor certainly has the girsa that Cheresh es yesh la tainis besulam v'yesh la kanas. The Cheresh es, even though she says nothing, there is, she gets a kanas as a besula, but there is tainis besulam against her. There is tainis besulam against her, and if she's not a besula, if there's proof that she wasn't a besula, then it's a mekach taos. Rabbi Yeshua says, all the Gemara says, Ein la tainis besulim, and the way Balamor says, it would also be true, Ein la knas, because she's not becheskas besula, and Ein la tainis besulim, what's the issue? The answer is, since she's not becheskas besula, he should have realized when he married her, she wasn't a besula, which means he knew, he did know. If he didn't know, it's his own fault, and he doesn't write the complaint. And whatever he wrote for her in the ksuba, whatever he promised her, that promise stands. He can't say, oh, I only wrote to her thinking she was a psula. Doesn't matter what you thought. She didn't tell you she was a psula. You shouldn't have thought she was a psula. It's your mishigas. So the Balamor then has to explain, for Rabbi Gamliel, why aren't we towing? In other words, if Yesh Tain is a psula, why don't we argue on her behalf that she was a mukas eitz after she got married, or Misha Nisarsa Nensa, that she was raped after Erison? The Balamor says, because we don't make such a taina because it's Sada Lo Shricha. What taina do we make? And when the Gemara said, the Gemara asked the Kash at the end. The Gemara said, Hey Chadama Rabban Gamliel, when does Rabban Gamliel say that she's believed when she makes the taina? But if she doesn't make the taina, Hey Chadatana Ebit, if she doesn't make a taina, then since when do we accept that? What case was he talking about? So according to the Balamor, he was talking about the case of Kanas. In other words, the Gemara's kasha was, why is it that according to Rabbi Gamaliel, just because she has a cheskas besula, if he says that she was a be'ula, and she doesn't say anything, because she can't say anything, because she's a chereshes, why is it that she gets a knas? She didn't make a taina that she was a besula, to say besulani. So the answer to the Gemara is that we are towing him for it. This is Tanina Lekas of Psach Pi Chalile. So the Ramban in response to this, that's what the Balamor said. So the Ramban had three questions. Number one, Rabban Yeshua doesn't believe that there's no such thing as a cheskas aguf. The Gemara says explicitly in Daf Ayin Hey that of course he believes in a cheskas aguf. It's just that when there's a cheskas mamon beats cheskas aguf. Which leads him to the second point, which is, and this was a very subtle point, this is what confused us in Shir on Thursday, and we went over yesterday, which is that according to Rabbi Yeshua, when he says Ein Latinus Basulam, what does Ein Latinus Basulam mean? It means that she's entitled to the ksuba that he wrote for her. And he can't say, you deceived me. So the Ramban asks Akasha, according to the Baal Hamor, how can you say this? In terms of his right to claim that she should have been a Basula, which we know that she wasn't a Basula. We don't know why. Well, we know she wasn't the Basula, but in terms of his right to claim that she should have been a Basula, number one, he's Musak on the Mamon of the Ksuba. Number two, the fact that she was born a Basula and there's some type of Chazaka there would lead us to understand why he thought going in she would have been a Basula. So, when we say that ein lo taina, really it should be ein lo taina besulam, he has no ability to taina that it was mekach taos because it wasn't mekach taos, because even if she's not a besula, there's no taos involved because he knew that or should have known that. So number one, and he claims, no, I didn't know that, and I did assume that, and I shouldn't have known that. Number one, he has a cheskas mama. Number two, she has a chazak of having been a besula, and therefore he had a right to expect, that she should be a besula. So the Ramban says, I don't understand according to you, Baal Hamor. According to you, in this case, when we say Ein lo tanis besulin, that makes no sense. Ein lo tanis besulin means he has to pay out the full ksuba that he wrote. But according to you, firstly, if there's no cheskas guf anyway, it's just a cheskas mamu for the Baal. And here, the cheskas guf is helping the Baal in this case. It's helping the Baal in the sense of substantiating his right to claim that I was deceived. It might help the girl in what sense? Not he can't. In the cheskas aguf might help the girl in the sense that we'll assume that it happened after Erusin.
Right, so you can't claim
that it was kodem Erusin and you deceived me. But it does give him the right to claim I expected you to be a besula. With regards to the ability now, when did she lose her besulim? So there, that's a regular case of tainus besulim. Rabbi Yeshua says that the raya is upon the isha to bring, not upon the baal. There it becomes cheskas mamon against cheskas aguf, and cheskas mamon will win according to Rabbi Yeshua. But in terms of the ability in the first place to claim, I had a right to assume she would be a besula, there the cheskas aguf is misayeah him. Yes?
I'm still not really understanding where the cheskas mamon has to do with it.
The cheskas mamon is just because, does he have to pay a ksuba or not? Well, mesupak, the answer is he's muchzak on the mamon. He shouldn't have to pay unless you can prove he has to pay. No, the point is, what's the purpose of his claim? The purpose of his claim is so that he won't have to pay any ksuba. So in evaluating that, and he won't have to pay any ksuba because he was entitled to assume she was a basula. So there are two things that work in his favor there. Number one, he's mochzak on the mamon, she shouldn't have to pay. Number two, she had a cheskas basula, therefore he was entitled to assume that she was a basula, and hence he was deceived and shouldn't have to pay. Correct. No, it just means, in that case, there are two things that work in his favor to not have to pay the ksuba. His cheskas mamon and her cheskas besulim. Ironically, yes. Again, she then has and then we could talk about, on the other hand, if she is not a besula, when did she not become a besula? That we could talk about. That works in her favor. Right, but imagine a case, by the way, in which there was no wait between the Erusin and the Nisuin. Imagine if they did them immediately, so then you could understand, there's no question that if she wasn't the Basula, she wasn't the Basula before the wedding, no matter what the reason was, Mukaseitz, Nensa, Zinsa, whatever it was, imagine in that case, her Cheskas Haguf doesn't help her at all. So all that you have is a cheskas mamon for him and a cheskas aguf for him that she should have been a basula. He was entitled to expect it, right? In that case, it's a 2-0. In a regular case, it's a 2-1. But the point is that the Ramban is saying that if in a regular case of tainus basulim, where he has a cheskas, where we know he was, where she was becheskas basula, where on the one hand, he has a cheskas mamon. On the other hand, she has a cheskas aguf. There Rabbi Yeshua says, cheskas mamon bi cheskas aguf. Certainly when he has a cheskas mamon and a cheskas aguf working for him, to entitle him to claim she should have been a besula, and he shouldn't have to pay anything that's a mekatos, certainly it should overwhelm, even if there is a cheskas aguf that works for her, to push off the loss of besulim to the last possible moment.
So it's a faulty explanation, or a difficult explanation with Rabbi Yeshua.
Correct. Then the Ramban has a third question, really the second major question that we focused on, which was the Ramban says, you're wrong on the question of cheskas besulim for Rabbi Yeshua for a simple reason. Let me tell you, you're wrong, sorry, it's Rambam Gamliel, you're wrong in saying your pshat cannot work in the Gemara in terms of which brisa you assign to Rambam Gamliel. Why? Because whichever brisa you assign to Rabban Gamliel, in that brisa, we are doing ta'aninon, something where we're being to'anin on her behalf. Remember that for Rashi, what will we to'anin on her behalf? That mukaseitz. She was a mukaseitz tachtov. She was nisansa tachtov. And therefore, that taina is what we explain on her behalf. And that worked just fine. However, I mean it was on Tainas Besulim. But if you say that Rabban Gamliel is the first Braisa, and the first Braisa says, Yesh la Tainas Besulim, and Yesh Laknas, then when the Gemara says that but for Rabbi Gamliel Ta'aninan, which we would have thought, but we do, which cases of those two are we Ta'aninan for her? It's not on Tainas Pesulim. Why not? Because she, according to the Baal Amor, she loses on Tainas Pesulim. We don't say on her behalf Misha Nisarsa Nensa or Mugas Eitzi, because it's Lo Shricha. What case must that go on for the Baal Amor where Ta'aninan for Rabbi Gamliel? Knas. Even if the Ramban had the Baal Amor's gear, Ta'aninan of the Gemara, according to the Baal Amor's her Rabbi Gamliel, goes on the first Brisa, must go on Knas. What is the taina then that we make for a girl by knas? The answer is we make the taina that she's a besula. So the Ramban says that's wrong. Why? Because the Ramban says when a woman is raped, she doesn't need a taina in order to collect a knas. Why? Because she is becheskas besula. Now, one of you asked me during Seder, I forget who it was, well, what happens in a case if she doesn't say she was a besula? She doesn't say anything. What would it then be if a man rapes a girl and says she wasn't a besula? What would we say next? They come in, she's in Beis Din, what would we say presumably? We would ask her. Hold up. And one would assume that we would ask her.
Well, if we're going with the Ravid, can we ignore what we
said? Okay, but let's not go with the Ravid for the moment.
Okay, go ahead.
What would we say at that point? We presumably turn to her and say, what's going on? If she said nothing, what would it then be? Why not?
Because she's getting her cheskas agof is Isra.
Why was her cheskas agof Isra?
What's that?
No, you can't. No, that's not fair. You can't say that. No. But Shor Shachar Lefanecha is when he has Bia the first night and there's no blood. That means before the Bia, she wasn't a Besula. That's Isra Cheskasa. We don't say when a man rapes a girl that since she's not a Besula now, Isra Cheskasa would be a Besula before.
I'm saying we can't prove anything from her current state about her previous state. She's not claiming anything about her previous
state. The point is she's not claiming. Why does that matter according to the Ramban? If the Ramban says she doesn't need a Taina, his argument the Baal Amor says she needs a Taina, why then does she have to say anything in that case? The answer is because if she doesn't say anything, it constitutes Hadar, Shikur Hadar. And therefore, what would it then be by Chay Reshes? Where she doesn't say anything?
One second. That's the Ramban's objection?
Hold on. He's going to build up. I got to explain. So I just want to understand for the Ramban Shita, you don't need a Taina by Knas. The girl doesn't need a Taina. So I'm asking you, if he claims in Beis Din she wasn't a Besula, we presumably ask her, and if she doesn't say anything, she's going to lose. So doesn't the girl require a taina? What about by, according to the Ramban, by a chereshes? What's the din?
No, she can't have a taina by a chereshes.
Exactly. By a chereshes, she doesn't need to say anything. Why? Because the shtika is not kahoda. But why do I say this? I say this because it highlights the fact that for the Ramban, you don't need a taina fundamentally. When you walk into Beis Din and say, I raped her, but she wasn't a basula, she doesn't need a taina to say basula ani because her claim requires a taina. Why does she require a taina in that case? So it won't be shtika kehoda. But by a chereshes who doesn't have the capacity to taina, her shtika is not kehoda. She doesn't need a taina, the Ramban says. She wins because he raped a girl who was becheskas pesula. She doesn't need a taina. All she has to do or not do is not be moda. And since a chereshes, so a regular pikachas, if she doesn't say besula yisi when he claims that she was besula, shtika kehoda. By a chereshes, it's not shtika kehoda. And therefore the Ramban says she doesn't need a taina. But the Baal Hamor says that Rabban Gamliel's words, when the Gemara asks on Rabban Gamliel, where does Rabban Gamliel say that she's believed? When she makes the taina, but if she doesn't taina, we're toan on her behalf, that really means that in order to win your claim, you must lodge a taina. And so the Gemara is asking, by a pikachas, she said besula ani, so she made a taina, so she wins. But would Rabbi Gamliel say by a chereshes, who doesn't make a taina, would he say, why should she win? If that's the Gemara's kasha, forget the fact that the Gemara gives the answer and says that we're taina on her behalf. The Gemara's kasha shows that you really do require a taina. The chiddush of the Gemara is that we can make the taina on her behalf. But the kasha of the Gemara, which doesn't change in the Maskana, with the kasha of the Gemara assumes that you need a taina by knas, a besula, a pikachas must say when he claims she was a bula, she needs to advance the taina besula hayisi. Not on the grounds that it won't be shtika koda, but in order for a claim, it's almost that really she has to walk into Beis Din and say, he raped me and I was a basula. And he says, I raped you, it's true, but you weren't a basula. Or they're Adim. You need Adim anyway. Adim say that he raped her. She has to say, I was a basula, you owe me kanas. If she doesn't lodge the taina, not because shtika koda, if she doesn't lodge the taina, she loses because she doesn't advance a taina. That's why the Gemara said, well, by chereshes, why should she get knas? Gemara's teretz is kigon dos tani rachi. We're towing on her behalf. So the Ramban says, if that's true, then obviously the Balamar is wrong. The Ramban says tanina does not work in a case like this. Ramban says you cannot do tanina in a case to override a chazaka. You cannot use tanina for such a purpose. If a taina is, if in order to have a case, you require a taina, nothing doing. The only thing a taina works for is to strengthen a chazaka that perhaps has been weakened. That's what the Ramban says. He says that lahamid chazaka de gufa o chazaka de mamona mehanya tainas based in mechol makom avol bechagon ze she'ein dina kibesula below tainas bari. So if you say, like, the, according to the Balamor, that without a taina, she doesn't have a claim, and a taina, by definition, when a party makes it, generally has to be tainas bari, then l'daracha ma tainas based in mosaf la b'cheskasa. Then based in advancing a taina is not a tainas bari, and it doesn't accomplish anything. Bishlama, if you say that she doesn't really require a taina, and I'll say the way I said, which is that, and you only need a taina by pikacha, so it won't be shtika koda. So in this say, based in can be tanina her behalf. It's another way of saying she doesn't really need a taina. She doesn't need a taina's bari. She wins because she has a cheskas pesula, and you don't need a taina with that. But if you say, like you, the Balamor, that you really need a taina, that was the Gemara's kash at the end, was when does Rabbi Gamaliel say that she's believed? When she tainas. That's implying that her taina is necessary for her to be believed. But the Ramban says that can't be by knas, because if that were true by knas, then you require a taina's bari, and based in it could not advance the taina on behalf. Yeah, if a pikacha said, besula yisi, she's believed. But based in it cannot advance it on behalf of a chereshes. That's what the Ramban said. Okay. Now let's continue now in the Ramban. That was Chazara. Let's continue now in the Ramban. Where he gives his pshat, he quotes Rashi, and he just spells out what he had said a little more clearly. Ella. Yaakov. You up to it? Up for it?
Okay.
If you're in my edition, the Oz Vahadar, on the regular pages of the Rif, before the lines get really wide, two lines before near the end, last three words. Ella Ikar Perish. It lines up at the last line of the Balamor.
Ella Ikar Perish Kedimir Rashi, Tahadi Tani, Aimla Tana Petulin, Rangam Leli, Titani, and Labuka Esi.
Right. Now, the key point, Rashi, is that the Had Katani Aimla Tani Spesulim is the one that's Rangam Leli. And we're Taninan on her behalf, Mukas Eitzi. Despite what the Balamor said that it's Lashika, we're still Taninan. Okay, so I want to make one he'ara here, which we're not doing the sugya, and I don't actually know the sugya. If I knew the sugya, I might say more. But I want to just highlight, a fundamental machlokas harishonim here about the issue of taninan. And here, your partner in crime is not here, because he's saving the world at the UN. And, but if he were here, I'm going to suggest that, again, there's a fundamental machlokas between the Ramban and the Baal Hamor, is what is the nature of Ta'anina. The Ramban, you could say there's a machlokas, the Baal Hamor and the Ramban, is about whether or not Mukas Eitz is Shchiach or not. But I believe somewhere the Gemara says Mukas Eitz is not Shchiach. And it's pretty good bet that nobody's going to say that Ones is Shchiach. That Mishir Stanin and Asti Shchiach. In other words, the Baal Hamor and the Ramban are not arguing about whether or not we can be Tanina on her behalf, that she's a Mukas Eitz, or that she was Nensa, They're really arguing just whether it's Shechiyach or not, Metzias. It's not because they don't believe Yechama Chukas and Metzias, but I think that's highly unlikely here. They're really arguing on Lamdus, whether or not you can say Taninon on a Milsot Dela Shechiyach. Now, what would the Ramban's position be? I don't want to discuss on that, but can you sort of intuit, what is the Ramban's view of Taninon?
We do it because so to counteract the fact that her shtika.
No. I forget our case specifically. Why, for the Ramban, can you do taninan on behalf of someone with a taina that you know is not likely to be the case? Right, the Baal HaMor says that according to Rabbi Gamliel, we're not tanina. He's not willing to say that from Rabbi Gamliel taninan on her behalf mishnis arsa nensa umugaseitzi because it's l'shchicha. The Ramban says that he thinks the Rashi is correct, that Rabbi Gamliel says taninan, that we'll say on her behalf that she was mukaseit, so she was raped. So I don't think it's the Ramban is saying it is a milsa de shchicha, that's why Rabbi Gamliel says taninan. It's because the Ramban believes that you can say taninan on behalf of someone even when it's lo shchicha.
I mean, Tana Beitin is so strong that even if in the case where it would be a Tana Shema or something, it's considered a bari.
Again, every Tainas Beisdin is a Shema on some level. Maybe we treat it as a bari, but at the end of the day, presumably that in itself doesn't depend upon whether the Tain is a Shechicha or lo Shechicha. The reason why Tain is based in a Shema is why? Why is every Tain is based in a Shema?
Because they don't know.
I don't think it's because it's statistically more or less likely we're going to label it a Shema or bari per se. Danny?
After the fact and the issue arises, the evidence is enough that basically will make the claim to say that this is one of those cases that's not enough. Meaning you don't...
But then what does the...
Whereas the side to say you're not timing in for Moshe Loshichim means even after the fact there's evidence to say that maybe this is what happened...
But I don't think that. So in other words, there's no evidence that that happened. In other words, what I'm saying is follows. When a woman is... Oh, you're making a claim, but I think you're still not correct in Metzias. What you're saying is that a woman becoming a mukas eitz or being raped is a milsa de la shchicha. But if you have a woman who is not a basula, and now that which is a rarity in its own right, and when she gets married, and you're trying to figure out what happened, so now mukas eitz and nensa is much more shchicha than ordinarily. Right. In other words, in the entire universe of women, it's a milsa de la shchicha. But in the universe of women who are found not to be basula on wedding night, it's not a milsa de la shchicha. But again, then you have to say the Baal HaMor thinks it is a milsa de la shchicha. Right? There's no reason, clearly, the Baal HaMor would admit once we know she's not a basula in determining what happened. Words, that's the point where we decide: is the shchicha or not shchicha? You'd still have to turn it in machlokas and metzias. And I also think in metzias it's not correct. I think of most of the women who turn out not to be basulas on the wedding night. Maybe I'm wrong, totally wrong. I would have guessed that it's a minority who were mukasets or a minority who were raped.
Meaning you're going to assume that where the person was going to, when based on Tanina, you're turning them for like the lesser. You're not going to be Tanina that, okay, she must have gone off and slept around all of it, that's why she's a tool, and therefore I don't give her.
So I don't want to see, but you can't. That's very interesting what you said, Dan Lekavskos. Right. In other words, you can't. Ironically, we say have a danas kala adam lakafs chos. Now, why don't dayanim listen to that in Beis Din? Because the chos for one is a chova for the other.
Yeah.
Right. So, in other words, here you can't. You're right on in terms of judging her behavior. You're right, but since he stands to lose, I don't think you can say.
Here she's not. But they're not. They're making a tana for her. Meaning, in place of her, not that they're setting out a ruling, they're just...
No, agreed, right, but I don't think that, I think having done, it's called, I didn't mention Dan Lakoff's course is really a din in your interpersonal engagement with other people. Right, okay. Okay.
But the idea is that, I mean, the idea of Tanim is that we assume that she would make this claim for herself.
Okay, so that I want to go down that road. The question, so what is the Baal HaMor thinking? What is the Ramban thinking? Now, the Baal HaMor says, look, assuming that she would make this claim, I like that formulation. I don't like any formulations actually. That's my problem. But The Ramban, I just, like, in other words, we're going to use terms, but they're going to obscure things, and I think it's, a svara is better than a formulation. The Ramban seems to believe, I'm going to use it, even though I hate this term, the Ramban believe it's a little bit like koach hatayna. In other words, in that, you're right, it's not likely, but she has the ability and the right to lodge that claim in Beis Din. And thus, Taninan basically just reflects the right of the defendant in this case to lodge a claim and to be believed. And we're exercising that right on her behalf. For the Baal Hamor, it's more like we're trying to get to the bottom of matters. Now, we have an obligation to speak up for those who are underprivileged. But if they're not in a position to speak for themselves. But that doesn't mean that we ignore the probability of circumstances involved. And the Baal Hamor says, since it's such an uncommon thing, it's one thing to advance a taina on her behalf when it's something that's a plausible and likely scenario. Even if it may not have to be 50-50, but in other words, if there's a reasonable probability that such a thing happened, then we can advance that on our behalf. In other words, we're willing to go up to a certain point. But if it's mamish milsa de lo shchicha, you know, it's true that if she had said it, she would be believed, but we really can't assume that that's what happened. In other words, on some level, we're trying to get to the truth, as opposed to viewing people as having a legal right to lodge certain claims and win certain rights. That's, in effect, what koach hatayna really means.
Yeah, you're right. That did obscure it.
What's that?
That did obscure it.
Right, but I think you understand what I mean. I think
what you're saying is very clear. Koach hatayna would obscure the term.
Right, koach hatayna means my right to lodge a claim. That's what it means. So here, because the person has a right, that's what koach, I mean, it means strength of the claim, but I think...
No, but it means my ego. It has connotations.
Yes, but remember, think about by Migo, by the way.
Exactly.
Think about by Migo. Yeah. When does Migo not work? There's one case, I mean, there are a few cases, but one of the cases Migo doesn't work is when we know the claim is false. In other words, everybody agrees that a Migo b'makom Eidim loses. The fact that I could have said the other taina is irrelevant. I said this taina, and we know this is a lie. And therefore, I lose. Right? In other words, even when you say Migo works, it's koach hatayna, it can't go that. What's that?
The sugi in krisis might appear the other way.
I know what sugi it has to be talking about. The guy who said, no, you're talking about the guy who says, I didn't eat khatas? Migo that I, right, Migo that I could have said, mezid ayisid. Right.
Works there.
Yeah, but the pashtus is that we interpret as what he's saying as mezid ayisid.
Well, there's.
I know.
There's a few approaches in your
show. I know.
And that approach has a lot of problems.
Right. Okay, so anyway, bottom line is that's what I meant by koach hatayna. It means if I have legal rights in a court, if I can win my case by lodging a certain claim, then based in, according to the Ramban, will lodge it on my behalf, even if it's a milsa de lo shchicha. If I'm incapable of speaking for myself, and when we say taninan doesn't require probability, it requires legal possibility and legal rights of the person to claim, and that's why the Ramban says we advance. And the Baal Hamor says no, that it's really a much more metzias thing. We're trying to arrive at what is the not probable truth and what is more than 50% likely, but what might the person have claimed that is a plausible taina. And while they would have been believed that they had said Mukas Eitzani according to Rav Gamliel or Mishastani Nanasti, because it's highly improbable, even though we believe it if they said it for sure, we can't advance such a claim on their behalf because it looks like it's really, you know, when she says X happened, you might say like this, she knows X happened. Could she be lying? Yeah, but she knows. It happened sometime and therefore she says it and we're not in a position to respond. But for Beis Din to say, maybe Mishira Nisarsa Nensa or maybe Muka Seitzaisa, that like already looks like you're reaching, grasping for straws. But the Ramban says, I don't care about the Metzias. What I care is if she had the right to make that taina, then we can lodge that taina on her behalf. Okay, so we did do a little on this. Okay.
Why?
So again, so you're right. You're accusing me now of simply having shifted the end zone, but not really having gotten into it, right? So the question really becomes, I would say the following. When Beis Din is Ta'aninan, is the role of Ta'aninan to clarify the facts when one party can't speak? or is the role of Taninan for Beis Din to exercise the rights of the party who can't speak? See, again, this goes back to the point that normally when you make a claim and there's no counterclaim, the other person loses because of shtika kahoda. Here, the other person is not moda, but they also don't have a claim to counteract you. As sort of a third party, you know, trying to determine what happened. I think that might be, you know, in common sense terms that make sense to us, the best way of putting it. So again, I don't know the sugya of Taninan well enough to say with certitude, but be aware, even if you don't like my suggestion, it seems reasonable to me if you don't, that there's a fundamental machlokas here, the Balamor and the Ramban. And I say this from the perspective of those of you who don't have great experience in Lamdus, that when you're interested in pursuing Lamdus, first you have to sort of isolate the machlokas in its real terms, and then you can ask the question, what exactly are they arguing about? Okay. Fine. So the Ramban, I said this because the Ramban highlights that El Igor HaPeirush, as you read Kedivri Rashi, the Hod de Katani Ein Latanis Besulim Rama Gamliel Hi De Tanina Le Mukas Eitzi. Okay, continue. V'chein Kosfu. So what's the question before you get to that field hachi? See, by the way, here's a beautiful case. Zach, you said the Ramban was much clearer here than he was in Chidushim. I would venture to guess that if you not read the Chidushim, you might have struggled to understand what the question was. Right? He doesn't. His question is, in a case where the Erisin and the Nisuin happen immediately together, where you can say Mishinis Arsanensa or Mukaseis Hitachtav, it has to have been before. So, what exactly is the Taina? Because in that case, there's nothing to Taina on her behalf. It's still going to be Mekachtos. Right? But the Gemara sounds like Chereshes, Engel Tainis, Besulam, Akorn, Dragam, Liel, ever. Now, of course, the simple answer is what I think the Rashba said. It doesn't mean ein lo tainis besulim ever. It means usually ein lo tainis besulim. I mean, when we can advance a taina, then we advance a taina. When we can't, so she does lose. But the Ramban, so now he's there in the Chidushim, he spells out the question much more. So what's the Ramban's answer? He says, afilu hachi. Means he has no claim against her. Why? The michte. So he has to make 2 points. Number one, when this guy wrote a ksuba for the Chereshes, he did it purely voluntarily. The Gemara, I mentioned this earlier a number of days ago, the Gemara in Yevamah says they weren't misaking ksuba for Chereshes so as to not discourage people from marrying them. Right? Normally, why was a ksuba instituted? Assuming it was instituted by the Rabbanan, Kedesha lo teikala bein avlotzia. So it's true, she'll teikala bein avlotzia, but no one's going to marry her in the first place if you have a ksuba. Right? They won't marry her because of the fear that if they decide the marriage isn't working out, they can't live with the Chereshes, then they'll have to pay a large amount of money. So therefore, he just decides, I won't bother to marry her. So in order to allow the possibility of marriage, and effectively, she'll tinal delas bifnei lovin, you know, bifnei chershos of nisuin, therefore they didn't require ksuba. So if he writes ksuba for her, that is out of his own goodwill and kindness. That's point number one. Point number two is v'kaimel anami.
Alma.
Right. So in other words, now the Ramban throws in the part that Rashi did, which is questionable. The Gemara doesn't spell it out. That a chereshes is more likely to be a chereshes if she's a mukaseit is not going to say anything, and therefore he should have realized she might be a mukaseit, and her silence says nothing. So therefore, he says it's not a mekachtos, and yet whatever he wrote in the ksuba, he wrote so voluntarily. So even if it should turn out. Even if it should turn out, he spells it out. Afal pi, emecha b'hilkach.
Hilkach, nasach hereshet, afal pi shakata v'am atayim, kisabatuahi, v'uvatsabatuahim, tonina mugalitz. V'kemen shemidat atzunotetav v'atayim, eim afsedek kum, she'in zemekach tov.
Now this is very, very, very interesting as well. Let me ask you a question. If the Chachamim required a ksuba to be written for a Chereshes, would the Ramban's point be wrong? Does the Ramban, in order to construct his point, requires two things? What are the two things he requires? In order to tie down her, when we know, when Erusin and Nisuin took place together, so we know that she wasn't the Basula before, for us to tie down her behalf, that she was a Mukas Eitz, the Ramban needs two things. And the question is, why? What are the two things he requires?
The voluntary
nature of the ksuba, number one. And number two,
that
if she were a Mukas Eitz, it wouldn't be a Mekach Tovus, because the rule by Mukas Eitz is, Bein Hikirba, Bein Lo Hikirba. So she's entitled to a mana according to the Chacham. We're not working with the Rabbi Meir now. My question to you is, why do we need the part that the ksuba is voluntary? The bottom line is that if we can be toanin on her behalf, there's the problem with when there was no gap between Eris and Nisun is that we can't be toanin Mukas Eitz Tachtav or Nensa Tachtav. So, but if we can be toanin Mukas Eitz, that she was a Mukas Eitz before, and that kind of works because it's not a Mekach Tos, then why does the Ramban have to invoke the voluntary nature of the Ksuba? That's is the answer. In other words, it's because if he wrote a ksubas besula for of 200, he would want to turn around and claim that I had no choice and I wrote that ksuba, but at the very least I should only have to pay a mana. Because you want to tine that she was a mukas eitz before we got married because it's the only tine you have. Fine, but a ksubas mukas eitz is only a mana. So the Ramban says no, because it was a voluntary ksuba, and he could have known, thought that she would be a mukas eitz. Therefore, when he wrote Masayim, he niach ma'osav al keren atzvi. You know what happens when you put ma'os on the keren atzvi? When you put your wallet down and you tie it to the horns of a gazelle, you know what happens to your money? Goodbye.
Is it a shofar?
You know, guys, that I'm quoting a Mishnah in the 13th parak of Ksubos, which is a machlokas adman and the chachamim of someone who went to Medina Sayam and someone came along and supported his wife, and whether or not he's entitled to demand payment from the husband. Right, and one of them says, "Ebnei Kohanim Gedolim," I think said that was it. It might have been Adman, it might have been Chanan, the two Dayanik Zeirus in Yerushalayim, the 13th parak, and the other one of them said, "Too bad, he niach ma'osav al keren atzvi." Put your money down on the head of the gazelle, your loss. He wrote her a ksuba of Masayim, his problem. He should have known she wasn't the psula. He was just choosing to give her a gift, in effect. What's that? If you learn the Mishnayis, okay. Anyway, so that's what the Ramban says. V'cheven shemidas atzma kosa Masayim einam afsedes klum and she'in zemekach tos. Because he knew. Otherwise, it would have been a Mekach Tos, not in the sense to be Mevatel the marriage, but she'd only been entitled to 100. In other words, if he married her, the assumption she was a Besula, and it turns out she's a Mukas Eitz, she's entitled to only 100. It's a partial Mekach Tos, in a sense, that he only pays 100, because it's not, in other words, Bein Hikar Ba'Bein Hikar Ba pays mana. The Raman says, not in this case. Uda Amre. Now, what's the other Braisa? This is the second Braisa. Ein la tainis besulim. What's the first price to say? Yeshla knas. Yeshla knas. The Ramban says, with the amre ha. In other words, Rabban Gamliel doesn't disagree. Rabban Gamliel doesn't believe that just because taninan, Rabban Gamliel doesn't believe that a mukas, that a chereshes is becheskas mukas and becheskas ba'ula. He doesn't believe that. He just believes we can be tonin on her behalf. But a stam chereshes, like a stam ish, is assumed to be a psula, and therefore yeshla knas. And when the Gemara says, ha, Rabbi Yeshua, it doesn't mean dafka Rabbi Yeshua. It means Rabbi Yeshua is masking to that. But it's even Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Gamliel would agree with both brises, but Rabbi Yeshua would disagree with the second brisa. Klomar. Okay, fine. That's the end of the Mechamos, and now I think everything between the Chedusha and the Mechamos is pretty clear. One last note in the Milchamos, and this is really more important from a larger vantage point. V'zosha shnuya.
V'zosha shnuya v'josefta, habala ha-choreshet, habala ha-shota, habala ha-bogaret, habala ha-eitz, einam knas, einam mishnah. She'im malikin, loshitku v'gmara v'ha-haksho v'knas v'knas.
Okay. Now, question number one. Does there exist such a tosefta?
Apparently, Perikin of
did you look it up? It exists in our printed Tosefta. I didn't check Kisvayat, but it's there. The Ramban says it's a Toh Sofer. Now, the truth is, there's a good reason why it's a Toh Sofer, I think. But there's an obvious, one obvious point that makes it obvious that it's a mistake. That it's a Mishabeshta, which is which?
Bogeres.
Mukase, it's true in Aknas. Shotan Chereshes, that's what's really under discussion on some level. Bogeres, in Aknas, come on. Oh, no, I take that back. Of course, Ein Laknas. I take that back. She's Becheskas Besula, but Ein Laknas. So I guess you're right. You have to, slip my mind. You have to I'm thinking about Tainus Besulam. Of course, the Bogeres should have Tainus Besulam on some level. I know, but Ein Laknas, not because she's not a Besula. Ein Laknas, because she's not a Nara. Now, Shotam Bogeres, the Ramban says, you know why it's a Toh Sofer? Because remember, he just said that the brisa that says Yesh Laknas is Debre Hakol. Because nobody says Ein Laknas. Even Rami Gamliel. Ah, but there's a Tosefta that says Ein Laknas. So the Ramban says it's a Mishabeshtra. Because if it were really a valid Tosefta, then Lo Shashku B'Gemara B'Lahakshash B'Knas Knas. The Gemara would have been demanded resolving the Knas issue as well. Now remember, by the way, for which Rishon does the Knas issue get resolved? There's no, in other words, the Gemara's approach deals with the Knas issue as well. Yes. Who else? Tosfos. Tosfos says the machlokas is whether or not a mukaseitz is becheskas, whether a chareshes is becheskas mukaseitz or not. According to Tosfos, even though no brisa says it, ein la knas. According to the second brisa, ein la tainus besulam, ein la knas. Okay, so both the Balamor and Tosfos, they offer interpretations which would explain it. The Ramban says, in truth, according to the Balhamor, well, I guess. Okay. Now, I mentioned this is a larger issue because we have a Tosefta. There are a lot of mistakes in our Tosefta. There are brises that are clearly mistaken in our Tosefta. Sometimes there are brises that are not clearly mistaken, but they're against the Gemara, they're against the Sugya of the Gemara. And what the Ramban, I don't know if all Rishonim do this, but the Ramban does it, I've seen in multiple places, and I think most Rishonim would agree, when there's a Tosefta that is not cited by the Gemara and it conflicts with which is found in the Gemara, the response is that the Tosefta is a Mishabeshta. Why? Because if the Tosefta had not been a Mishabeshta, had it been a Mitaretzta, a correct, a straight brisa, a proper brisa, the Gemara would have known it and would have cited it. That particular premise is interesting, but one wonders whether it's actually correct or not. Meaning, there are brises that we have in the Tosefta that are cited in the Yerushalmi in the same form they're found in the Tosefta, and the Bavli doesn't seem to know of them or doesn't have them that way. Right? In other words, it could be that the Bavli Taka doesn't know of that brisa. There were a lot of brises floating around. We do not know what the origin of our Tosefta is. The Gemara speaks about a Tosefta. Who was responsible for Tosefta according to the Gemara? And Tosefta would be the official, what? Chi and Ravoshia, right? The official, Kol Masnisa Dolomitanya Beruchi Ravoshia, so it was not accepted. We don't know exactly what our Tosefta collection is. The one thing that I believe that a number of the modern Chokrim, I think like Albeck and others, demonstrated that our Tosefta does not line up always with the braises cited in the Gemara as Tana de Berachir, Tana de Berachia. So, anyway, but the general methodology, I think, of Rishonim is to dismiss braises when they're against the Bavli. We can debate the historical reality or not, but that is generally the approach they take. So that is what the Ramban says. Okay, so very, very, very briefly, in review, there were three shitos in the Rishonim and how to understand what the Gemara's resolution of the problem of Chereshes, Yesh Latanis Pesulim Yesh Laknas, or maybe just Yesh Laknas, and on the other hand, Chereshes Ein Latanis Pesulim. There was the position of Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananel, the Gaonim, and the Ramban. who say that the second brisa that ein latanis pesulim is Rabban Gamliel, that a cheresh cheresh is becheskas pesulim ordinarily. So if she's raped, she's entitled to a knas. But if she turns out not to be a besula, if she turns out not to be a besula, Rabban Gamliel says, Ein la tainas besulim, because we are atoning on her behalf that either she was a mukas eitz tachtav or a nensa tachtav, or according to the Ramban, even when there was no gap between eris and nisuin, we tainted that she was a mukas eitz, and he wrote her a ksuba voluntarily, knowing full well that she might not be a besula. That's approach number one. Approach number two is that of the Balei HaTosos, who claim that the machlokas from Rabbi Yeshua, wherever that comes from, we don't really know, is whether or not a mukas eitz is becheskas, whether a chereshes is becheskas mukas eitz and thus not a besula or not. According to Rabbi Yeshua, she is becheskas mukas eitz, and that's why and Rabbi Gamliel, which way does it work? Rabbi Gamliel holds that that a chereshes is becheskas mukas eitz, and Rabbi Yeshua says that she's not, and therefore, according to Rabbi Gamliel, ein la tainis besulim. According to Rabbi Yeshua, yesh la knas. And finally, the third sheet is that of the Baal Hamor, which is, but according to Tosafot, I should add, the second brice is Rabbi Gamliel, the first brice is Rabbi Yeshua, just like Rashi said. And when the Gemara invokes Taninan, it's Taninan on behalf of the girl to say that she was a Mugaseitz Tachtav. And that's why, Ein Latanis Besulim, and she would get her Ksuba. According to the Baal Hamor, the first brice is Rabbi Gamliel, and he assumes that Rabbi Gamliel believes that a woman, generally, and a Cheresha specifically, has a Cheskas Aguf of being a Besula that counts, and therefore Yesh Laknas, and Yesh Latanis Besula means he's entitled to expect that she be a Besula. But Rabbi Yeshua believes that she's not, that Cheskas Aguf doesn't really matter, and therefore a Chereshes, who is not Toenis anything, she Ein Latanis Besulim, because she is not, you can't, the Cheskas Akuf doesn't matter, and the fact that she didn't tell him before the wedding, I'm not a Besula, doesn't create a Mekach Taos, because she's not capable of talking, and he should have realized that just because she doesn't say anything doesn't mean she's claiming to be a Besula. Those are the three Shitos. Okay. Any questions about that? If not, we may now turn to the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis. I will gladly take a volunteer, a genuine volunteer. Ezra. Okay, so let's just translate, analyze briefly the first part of the Mishnah. These women have a no knas. The first, why? What is it about these three women? No, we assume they're not basulim. Right, we assume they had bia. Now, the shvuya, the assumption is she was probably raped, and if she wasn't raped, she may have willingly submitted to a captors in the hopes of saving her life or something like that. But the assumption is she is not a basula. What about a shifcha and a gioress who converted above the age of 3 years and a day? So Rashi writes here something, which he writes several places in Shas, and I would like to explore this, not now. Right now I just want to sort of get a skira klalit of the first part of this sugya. What does Rashi say? Yisera sabano shaloshanim. Okay. So there are two assumptions that Rashi is making here. One that is indisputable in terms of halacha, and the other, which is a very interesting premise, but it's a point that could be discussed. Number one is that there's no bia below the age of 3 years and a day, and that halachically is a fact. In other words, when we talk about bia, we're not just talking about a physical act, a penetration, but rather we're talking, it requires an age requirement. One could theoretically have intercourse with a child, loathsome as the idea is, of a child under the air, a girl under the age of 3 years and a day, but it is halachically not treated as bia. Chazal also assume, which may not be, I'm not sure it's true, Pimitzias, is that the besulim grow back. Now, I always used to think that was crazy, and if you want even crazier, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, speaking about the influence of the Sanhedrin, say that if a girl lost her besulim in such a way that she was 3 years and a day, but then based on was ma'aber the shana, so now she, I don't remember exactly how that works out. You probably have to work out an other Mishnah or Sheni thing. Now, based on ma'aber the shana, try this. The girl was born on the third day of Adar Sheni. And let's say in her 12th year, right now it's not a leap year, and Adar Rishon comes, we assume it's not going to be a leap year, it comes the third day of her of Adar, it becomes her third birthday. She has Bia then, according to the Gemara, the Besulim don't grow back. But if Beis Din now is Ma'abar the Shana, and now her birthday really becomes Gimel Adar Sheni, which she was born on, then the Besulim will grow back. The Gemara in Sanhedrin at the end of, I think, the first Mishnah, in the first parak, quotes a pasuk or something like that, a krol elyon something, lakel gomer alai. It's a pretty unbelievable statement. So clearly that views this as a metaphysical statement more than anything else. From a biological perspective, I simply do not know how to explain that, Yushalmi. There is an interesting question, do Besulim grow back?
Yeah.
So I always used to say that's crazy, but it's not that they grow back. It's not as crazy when things in the following sense. There are people, there are charities that work, doing work, they're really, it's really doctors and people with that kind of skills who work in Muslim countries to stitch a hymen together when it's been broken. To protect the girls, you know, from potentially being killed by their families or, you know, and there being a tainus besulim. In our day and age, I don't want to say there's never a tainus besulim, but I doubt it's a terribly common case. Firstly, there's no issur involved usually, typically, unless it's a kohen and it turns out the paramour was not Jewish, because it's just a, it's because we do eris and issur together. The only shayla in tainus besulim is a mamonos issue. It's a much simpler shayla. But there, they have tainus besulim, and they might discover the girl wasn't the virgin, and they'll kill her. So there are these people who go around to save these girls, and sometimes, of course, it wasn't even their fault. You know, it was a family or family friend who was responsible, but of course they'll burn the girl anyway. They don't care in many of these societies. So in order to protect them, they sew it back up. Now, the truth be told, this is an indicator of the fact also that I think sometimes you can get, I think I've read about this, or there's a tshuva Rav Moshe might talk about this actually, sometimes if the hymen is broken, if there isn't continuous intercourse, meaning regular basis, it might, you know, the membranes might sort of reattach themselves to one another. In other words, the hymen is a membrane that is attached around the edge of whatever, some point in the, I don't know, the vaginal canal. And when you have intercourse, you know, pushing an object through, and you don't have to have intercourse also, there are other situations, certain medical things that might involve as well, could break the hymen, right? And as it pushes enough of it, and really fills the hole, so it just tears the hymen. But theoretically, if the hymen didn't tear completely, the membranes might sort of reattach. They could heal. Right? So what they're doing in the surgery, again, I'm no buck. You have to ask an OBGYN exactly under what circumstances it might happen. It's not normal. I mean, again, normally people get married, they have intercourse, and after she goes to the mikvah a couple weeks later, they start to have regular intercourse, and that's the end of the story. At some point, it's dead and gone, never coming back. But it's not inconceivable that Besulim maybe could sort of heal. It's not, depending, if they're totally, you know, torn away, it's not inconceivable they would heal. So it's not inconceivable that a young child, the besulim could be damaged and sort of reclose up enough that you get bleeding and so on. Okay, but this is a halachic statement. This is not, I mean, so there is a metziah statement made there, but from a halachic perspective, a girl below the age of 3 years and a day cannot be a ba'ula. She could, theoretically, I would argue, a metziah, become bia mukaseitz. I mean, if bia took place before the age of 3 years and a day, and let's say the besulim did not grow back, she would halachically be a mukaseitz, not be a ba'ula. That's a din. That is a din. So assumption number one, which is indisputable that Rashi makes, is that once they reach the age of 3 years and a day, you can't have halachic bia. Bia that takes place afterward, and by the way, in order for a woman to be a ba'ula, you don't have to break the psulim. What constitutes bia? I think we spoke about this last semester. What is the halachic definition of bia? Ha'ara, which means hachnasas ha'atara. In a man, I'm not forgetting about whether we know whether it happened or not. Let's say someone comes and says the following. We did a bia, but we didn't get very far. Let's say the hymen was unbreakable. But even when the hymen's unbreakable, and in the act of intercourse, the man, you know, in trying to achieve penetration, member runs into the hymen, and I assume, I don't know exactly the hymen's location, but there's probably enough space from the outside of the woman's body, you know, until the hymen, where you would at least have hara. In other words, the atara is, you know, I don't know, probably an inch or so in distance from the tip of the penis, and therefore, presumably, you will achieve halachic bia. You don't have gemar bia, but you have tchilas bia. And for all purposes except for shivcha harufa, tchilas bia is bia. So a woman in that case, let's say where she had an impermeable hymen, even though they haven't broken the hymen yet, if they attempted to have intercourse, mistama, she has the halachic din of a ba'ul at that point. It doesn't. If a woman has bia with hataya, right? Hataya we spoke about, it's coming up in Daf Yomi. So if you have hataya, whatever that is, whatever reason you didn't break the basulim, she is a ba'ula now, even though she has basulim. You can have, apparently, according to some thought, virgin birth, and you can have non-virginal basulim. Right? Yeah.
So we're
normally not going to know. We're done al pi rov, and therefore, normally, when a woman still has the basulim intact, she was a basula. She is a basula. And normally, when she doesn't, well, we don't know whether she's a mukasetz or a ba'ula, right?
So, like, let's say a guy marries her, like this girl who only had halara, and then after a while, he has no time as basulim because he found a
basulim.
So then, sometime later, some even come and say that she had halara at some point before the marriage.
So now he has a right to time as basulim.
It's a make of tubs, and he can.
Correct. Correct. Not typically going to happen, but. I'll tell you, I say they're not, you know why it's not typically going to happen? In order to have witnesses that for bia, what is required halachically? No. By a married couple who divorced, then we say, hin, hin, yichud, hin, the bia. There's a presumption that since they're so comfortable around one another, they just did what they always did. What is required in order? You want to kill a man and a woman for committing adultery. What do the Edom have to see? No! Gemara at the end of the first paragraph of Makos, and it must be elsewhere, also says, you don't need to see Kamachal B'Shoseris. It's only Achayiru Kedera HaMenafim. Right? You see them under a sheet, looking like they're having intercourse, you know, that kind of activity, that not that they're lying next to one another, but they're actually physically engaged, like you might see in a movie on television. Right? That's called Shiyira Kedera HaMenafim. And that is sufficient. You don't need to see Kemachal Bishvil Feris. I thought the Gemara implied there, although I don't think we pass them this way, that for Ksuba, if you master the Ksuba, you might need Machal Bishvil Feris. It's the last Gemara in the first parak in Malchus. The Gemara says, no, I get it. We pass the Shiach Rechim Narafim.
You don't
pass the Kemachal
Bishvil Feris?
No. Oh, when they're talking about how they ask questions in order to not get a guy killed. How do you get off the hook? So the Gemara says, Rabba suggested that Amitavayim re'isem kemachol bishvil feres. Rabbanon, hechi dainu. Rabbanon, how would you ever be done since you're never going to see machol bishvil feres? Kidishmol, the Amar Shmol, b'menafim mishiyiru kemenafim. If it looks like they're being menaif, right? Okay. Anyway, so the point is, you asked the question. There's a reason why I went down that road to ask that question. What's that? Right, so again, if Adam were to come and say, in other words, see, ordinarily, if Adam came and said, had yichud, or they did this or that, We might say that they didn't. If she has dam, there's almost a presumed chazaka that they were fooling around, but not fooling around enough. Right? In other words, normally when you have edim who say if she's not a basula for whatever reason, and there were edim that they looked like they had bia, so we're certainly going to say the edim are sufficient. We might not even require how much we require is an interesting question. But if she produces, if there's dam, so immediately this, I would say, you wonder whether or not kedera hamanafim would actually work, because if there's a count, in other words, it's kedera hamanafim and look like it, right? But maybe they really weren't. Maybe they really weren't, and therefore it only looked like it. So if she has dam besulim, then that would provide a smach to say that it only looked like it really wasn't. Yeah, Zach?
Isn't there a Lucas somewhere. I want to say about like Isha Bibsulah Yikach, whether or not it's like it's by a book or something.
Kol Besulah, the Gemara Nivamos. Yeah, we did that last semester. Whether or not it's Kol Besulim or he makes this Besulim. That was the Machlokas whether he can marry a Bogeris or not.
Right.
That's just the question of whether the Besulim partially have dissipated, dissolved. And we spoke about it in the previous Sugya.
Isn't that Marshall that the whole, whether or not she's a Besulim is completely dependent on whether or not she's a Besulim?
It depends for what purposes. Well, let me frame it to you this way, Zach. The only issue whether or not, no. That just means that if she doesn't have Basulim, she's also not a Basula. In other words, she's not a Basula. For what purposes? For a Kohen Gadol? That's a Machlokas. For a Ksuba, well, there everybody agrees about Geras gets a Masayim. The real issue is that, in other words, the difference between a Ba'ula and a Mukaseitz is really only an Afka Mina and a limited number of Dinin. It's a Din, Legabe, it might be a difference in Ksuba, and whether it's a Mekach Taos or not. Mugaseitz is not a Mekach Taos, but Ula is a Mekach Taos. But when the Torah reform officially requires Pesula, a Mugaseitz is not a Pesula. In that case, Mugaseitz is not any different than Pesula. Right? So it all depends. For the most part, Mugaseitz is not a Pesula. When it comes to Onei Semifata, Kanas, she's not a Pesula. So the only purposes for which a Mugaseitz might be considered a Pesula is for Ksuba purposes, because she's been untouched by a man. For Rabbi Meir, Ksubasa Masayim. For the Rabbanan, there's no Mekach Tov, Ksubasa Zman. Okay? Whereas a Ba'ula would be mastered everything. But that might be the only case where fundamentally there's an afkamina between, let's say, a Mukas 8 and a Basula. Okay. Assumption number 2 in Rashi, which is the radical one. What does Rashi say? That Be'becheskas Hefgerhein, Ve'nivelos Benach Reyusan, Ve'ashvuya Be'shivuya, Be'shivuyusan. Now, the last statement I understand. The chazaka, ironically, you see one in a moment. The chazaka that a shvuya was neveles, that's not a strange chazaka. Why? Because that's unfortunately what people do to captives. Rape in war and rape of prisoners is unfortunately all too common today. And it is not limited to so-called barbarian, primitive third world societies. It is unfortunately all too common even in the Western world, both in prison and even in the army. Big problems. War is a nasty thing. So are prisons. Prisons are bad and war is bad. So that I understand, but there's an irony. What's the irony? What is the din of shvuya not being a psula? Is it a din the rice or din the rabbana? For example, Shvi is not allowed to marry Kohen because she's bechazaka that she was an elis to one of her captors, assuming her captors were goy. When we say Shvi'ah, we mean captors who are goyim. If they are Yisraelim Yuchasim, then the din of Shvi'ah doesn't apply. Here it does. Here it might apply. But Lagabe Kohen being prohibited to a Kohen in Truma doesn't apply. Here it would apply, presumably, assuming that these are...
Are you assuming Yisraelim are going to be raping her?
Probably. But we could discuss that issue. It's possible. Even here, we would say Jewish captors are not rapists. But I doubt that's true. If they're kidnappers, they're probably rapists. But okay, maybe not. But putting that aside, what's the din of the psul shvuya? That she can't marry a kohen or truma? Is it psul darabanan or psul daraisa? It's a psul darabanan. This is very important to be aware. That a shvi is not a psul daraisa, because it means that if a kohen marries a shvuya, the child min haTorah is a kohen kosher, but mid rabbanon is pasul. That child may, God forbid, not marry a grusha or a gioris or any other woman that a kohen is not allowed to marry, because min haTorah he is a real kohen.
Marry a shvuya.
What?
Could he
kidnap a woman and marry her?
Could he marry a shvuya? Mimanavshach. Midaraisa is a kohen. Midaraisa she's a sher. Midrabanan he's a halal. Midrabanan.
No.
Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't work that way.
I don't think it works that way.
Midaraisa, just because, meaning if you got a daraisa, if you got both the daraisa at Sabah Hakel and Sabah Hakmir, and a darabanan Sabah Hakel and Sabah Hakmir, do we just say that?
No, but they line up here, really. If you assume that, unless you want to say maybe his mother wasn't Niveles, but the woman he wants to marry was Nivela, that would be your tying against this. Right? That would be the only way to make a taina. There was a case, I will not mention names, of a rabbi who had a balabas who was a kohen who wanted to marry a giores, I think. His mother of the kohen had been a Holocaust survivor. And so the rabbi decided, she's a shvuya. His father was not allowed to marry her. Therefore, he is the halal and is allowed to marry a giores. Unfortunately, the rabbi was allowing an issur d'oraisa to transpire in this kiddushin because his mother was only pasul midrabanan at most. I would go a step further. Apparently, the father didn't have a problem with this. The father didn't have a problem with this. Truth, it doesn't matter what the father, whether he has a problem with it or not. Because the father didn't feel, hey, by doing so, you're impugning what I did in marrying your mother. He didn't care. But it doesn't really matter. But here, just a Musar Haskel in life and in Psak Halacha, for those of you who eventually have to render some kinds of decisions. Number one, you have to know what you're talking about. This is Aleph base. All you need to do is learn Mishnayis with Kahati, the second Perakim Subos, and you would know that immediately. Or learn any number of Asugyos and Shas that assume that Shvi is only Psal Dorabana. But number two, which is even the greater tragedy, in order to be Mekel and make one person happy, you know what you did? You were Motzi Laz on all the Nitzole HaShoah. In other words, all the Nitzole HaShoah, you just labeled as Shvuyos.
Isn't that true?
So the answer to that question may be, in fact, in Metzias, it may be absolutely, totally untrue. I am under the impression that, I'm sure it happened, but for the most part, the Nazi guards did not sleep with the prisoners because...
Well, that may be, but they're still shvuya.
No.
The Romani didn't.
The point is, if you have shvuyo, if you have shvuyim, you know, if you have shovim, I guess, who you know are not sleeping with their captives, if you have reason, a chazako and umdetanoso, then it's not the din of shvuyah anymore. It's certainly one can make a very strong argument in that case. Right. In other words, you learn the Mishnayos in the second parak, and you'll see that there are situations where we don't assume a shvuyah was nivellus based upon the motivations of the captors. If they were seeking a ransom or something like that, you learn the Mishnayos, and you'll see there are complicated Mishnayos, but you see that we do in fact take into account circumstances of the shvuyim to decide whether or not the captors might not. There might have been reasons. If there are reasons why the captors would not have slept with them, then we don't treat them as becheskas beulos to their captors. So the bottom line is your motzi laz on all the nitzolei shoah, you know, to say that they're all basically becheskas, you know, halalos or zonos, you know, in terms of kahuna, just so you can be makel on one person. There's that, it was shalokedin anyway. Shalokedin. Right. Sometimes, you know, Chazal say about Shaul HaMelech, that when he was supposed to be an Achzor, he was a Rachman. And then when he was supposed to be a Rachman, he was an Achzor. When it came to Agag, and Amalek, he was a Rachman when he was supposed to be Achzor. And then the end result was that when it came to Novi or Kohanim, he was an Achzor when he should have been a Rachman. And the truth is, that's always the case. You know, what is... You have misguided approaches because you think that you're saving one person or doing a favor for one person, and you end up doing a lot of collateral damage. In this case, again, it was halachically simply a toa. So it was a toa bidvar mishnah. So anyway, the din of shvuya is only the rabbanon. Ironically, but what's the din of shivcha and giores? Shivcha and giores. So Rashi writes that. Mistama, they were nevalos because they're hefker. Becheskas hefker him nevalos minach v'yosan. Now, I have two questions about this Rashi, which is a concept that seems to be repeated in many places in Shas. Number one, is that true? I have a question for you. Hilchos Yichud, gentlemen, you, if you are single, or it doesn't matter if you're single, it means if you don't have a wife who's present. Single, whether you're single or your wife's not there. And there's another woman present, or there are two women present. You, one man, is not allowed to have yichud with two women. Period. Unless one of them is his wife. Let me ask you a question. what about if one of those women is 2, 5, 9, 11? What's the din? So, the theory goes like this. The theory is the reason why a man is not allowed to have yichud with two women is because nashim will be mechapa zolzel. They'll cover up for each other. They're not going to go around bragging and boasting. Men, unfortunately, at least in the popular culture, always go around bragging and boasting, unfortunately, in many ways that are vile and disgusting. There's a school somewhere in California where they had, like, you know, tallies or logs of this. It was disgusting, absolutely disgusting. The same parents who would have been appalled if their daughters were on the list would have probably said nothing if their sons were some of the perpetrators. The problem we have. It's a problem with a double standard in our society. But the bottom line is that men brag, women don't. And therefore, Nasha Machapas also were afraid that each one will cover up for the other. In other words, they keep quiet because the other one will do the favor in return. That's why there's an issur of yichud with two women. Now, that's why if one of them is a woman with whom would never have bia with you, or would never tolerate you having bia with the other woman, either, let's say, it's your mother or your wife, so then there's no issur of yichud. If the girl is 2 years old, she's not ru'yah habia, so she has no incentive to cover up, but she also doesn't know what the heck is going on. So that is a violation of yichud. But what if the girl is old enough to understand what's going on, to go around talking about what she saw, but she has absolutely no yetzer hara and no interest in bia? As the Gemara says, yodas tam bia ve'ena moseres atzma l'viya. Right? An 8 or 9 or a 10-year-old normally has absolutely no interest. The word that would come to mind for them would be ew. Okay. But if they see something go on, you can bet that if they saw it go on, that every one of their friends in third grade knows what they saw. And that's why there is no Isser Yichud. Now, so there is a concept in Halacha about, you're not allowed to be Misyached with a girl that age alone, only with her. But as soon as there are two women and one of them is that age, then it is Mutter. That does away with the prohibition of Yichud. Now, doesn't that demonstrate that there's a Chazaka about a Katana that she's not Moser Asatz Malabiyah? And I don't think that's different. That's not a religious values issue. That's a biological issue. Right, that children of that age are not interested in this. They haven't reached puberty. They don't have that kind of a drive. So it's odd to say, yeah, if you told me a 13-year-old Gioris, a 13-year-old Shifcha, I would agree. You could at least say, Mistama b'cheskas hefkarhem, maybe. But that's a little bit odd. That's number one. Number two, Rashi makes bigger problems because Rashi says this as well when it comes to the definition of a zona lekohen and a gioras. Is a kohen allowed to marry a gioras? So you all know the answer to the question based upon the story I just told you, which is, of course not. Now, there's actually a four-way machlokas harishonim. One position says, Rabbi Yehuda says, basker zachar kvas chalal zachar, that if the father is a ger, the daughter is a gioras for the purposes, let's say, of kahuna. Just as if the father were halal, the daughter is a halala. We don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda.
Does that go forever?
Yep, down the male line, yes. You'd have to have daughter, granddaughter, and then the granddaughter is mother, muteris, to a kohen.
Why? Is that true halal?
What's that?
Is
it true halal? Yes. A halal, a kohen, once you have a halal, his sons are halalim. Even if he marries he makes
a woman a halalim.
That's true too.
But their daughter wouldn't be.
Correct. No. If he's a halal, his daughter is a halala. But if she goes now and marries a Yisrael Kasher, her daughter is not a halala. She's a halala. So halalus gets transferred from the father. Rabbi Yehuda says, basker zachar, kivas halal zachar.
He doesn't have a halal?
No. A man's status after he is born, in terms of his yichus, leaving aside tzuadaka and koshacha, which is not a yichus psul, it's a different exercise of custom. A man's status never changes after he's born. What he's given, assuming the facts don't change retroactively, in other words, assuming that there's no mamzeris lamafreya, a man is born as X, he is always X. I mean, he can convert, okay, but a Yisrael who's born with yichus X, halal, nasin, mamzer, kohen, levi, Yisrael, that's immutable. That's immutable. But Isha, through Bia, can be Nishalala, or might be able to acquire the status of Zona, perhaps, but that's it. Right? I don't think there are other changes. So, Rabbi Yehuda's position is that you're always going down the male line. The daughter, after any generation, number of generations of males, will always be Asura Lakuna. We don't paskin that way. We assume certainly that if the father was a ger, but the mother was a Bas Yisrael, born a Bas Yisrael, the daughter may marry Cohen without any questions. Shita number two is that if both parents were gerim, the daughter may not marry a Cohen. I think that is Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Shita, maybe Filippinius too. But if one parent is born Jewish, then the daughter, and both parents were Jewish at the time of conception, in other words, one had converted already, then the daughter may marry a Kohen. Shita number three, which is Rabbi Yose, unless I flipped it with Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, is that as long as both parents are Jewish, when the daughter is conceived, and then born obviously, she may marry a Kohen. In other words, neither parent needs to have been born Jewish. And the fourth shita, which we don't pass like at all, is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's position that if the girl converts before the age of 3 years and a day, she's allowed to marry a Kohen. Okay. Now, the definition, why is a Gioris not allowed to marry a Kohen? That's whatever you define a Gioris as, she has the halachic definition of Zona. L'halacha l'maisa we pasuk l'chatchila, a Kohen is not supposed to marry a girl if both her parents are gerim. But b'di'evan, if he married such a girl, I know one is supposed to be Jewish at least, but if he married such a girl, we don't make him divorce her. So Me'ikra, then we pass like the position I think I attribute to Rabbi Yose, that as long as both parents were Jewish at the time of conception, the daughter's allowed to marry Cohen. Now, what's the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and, in effect, the other Tanaim about Zona? So Rashi writes, and as Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai believes, the Gemara gives a perish, which has nothing to do with this, but Rashi, I would say the following, Rashi writes, I think in a number of places, at least once, that the Gioris is Psula Kahuna as a Zona because she was Nivala Be'ilas Nos, Becheskas Nivala Be'ilas Nos. Like here. Here it's for Be'ilas, she's a Psula Na. So I have a question for you. Let's say you had a girl who was born. In other words, well, let me say it this way. According to Rashi, why would we not hold like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? According to Shimon Bar Yochai, if the girl did not have Bia, could not have had Bia before she converted, she is Muteris Lekohen. So why would anybody disagree with that? Why would we label, according to all the other Tanam, why would we label this girl as Zona, number one? Number two, let's say you had a girl who's older than 3 years and a day, but a Metzias. You had eight, somehow you could have Edom that she never had Bia. So would she be Muteris Lekohen? I mean, the answer is no, but why according to that Perush in Rashi? But he writes like this in a number of Perush places in Shas. We tend to say that the reason why, the fact that a Gioris who's born and converted the day after she's born is Asura Lekohen indicates that it's not because of a physical act of Bia. It's about a Kedusha status. She was born as a Goya and therefore she has the quote-unquote halachic din of Zona. And it doesn't matter how pure and virginal she is, she can be the biggest tzaddikus in the world, she's still Asura Lekohen.
Isn't that the answer?
What? I know, but Rashi doesn't seem to say that.
What does he say?
All over Shas, he says because the Chazaka she was Nivalis.
That's the reason what? When does he say that?
Why a Goya is considered a Zona?
For the purpose of Kahuna?
Yeah.
He's a doctor for Kahuna. Because here it doesn't matter. This is just whether or not she's.
Correct.
But he says that when.
So here we just say below the age of 3 years of the day, it's impossible. So obviously she gets a Knas. Right. But Rashi says in a number of places, it sounds like the reason why a Kohen can't marry a Goya, a Gioris, is because she's Becheska Zona, as opposed to being definitionally a Zona. It's very, very interesting. It's difficult. All right, we may talk about this a little more. Now read the second half of the Braisa. Ezra? Okay, so we discussed this already. There are three arayas, by the way, that are missing from the Mishnah. What are the three arayas that are missing that normally come in sequence with these six? Emo, Eim Aviv, and Chamoso, Eim Chamoso, Eim Chamiv. In other words, it's Ishobita, two generations apart. You have the nine different arayas. Your own biological daughter, even if you never married the mother, your biological daughter and granddaughters, your woman you're married to, your wife's daughter and granddaughters, even if they're not your own, and your woman's, you're married to her mother, and her two grandmothers.
Kiddushin,
you need kiddushin. That's called
woman, you can sleep with their daughter.
If you slept with a woman, you could marry her daughter. I'll be then. There's a machlokas by Anusa Sav and Futa Sav, Rabbi Yehuda ben Chachamim. But other than that, the Alpidin, the Mishnah says, no sin ala the Mishnah in the beginning of the, I think, 11th parak of Yevamos, no sin ala Anusa Val Mafuta, Bamafata Vaone Salanasua Chayef. In other words, if you ma'anes a woman or you seduced her, but you didn't marry her, you could then marry her one of the relatives. But if you married a woman and now you, even if you divorced her, if you seduce or ma'anes one of her relatives, you chay misa. Okay, so why does the Mishnah not have chamosayim chamet here? Because they can't be basulim. We don't believe in virgin birth, and since it's his wife's mother and wife's grandmothers, they've already given birth. And you could also assume they can't be Naros. They certainly have to be the age of Bulgaris.
Or his own mother.
What's that? What?
Or his own mother.
Well, again, they don't list his mother. His mother is not part of the nine. She's separate.
Well, is she normally
Chayav Misa? Skila. And his grandmothers are only Shnias Larayas, believe it or not. Okay? But bottom line is you're not going to list any of them. You're not going to list the mother because she's not a Besula. Impossible. Yes?
So, did you say that a Shmuna and a Gyoris and a Shukar are all, I guess, well, I don't know, my question was, like, if they're possible to Kahuna, they do a Bona. That's not what we deal with.
Correct.
No,
who? No! Chesed Be'ulos for Knas, but we assume that a zona, that a definition of a zona, any Kohanim here? The poll survey, no Kohanim. What?
Dovi's not here.
That's right. So we assume that the definition of a zona, which is an Issa D'Oraisa for Kohen, is Giyores, Shivcha, and Shenivala Be'ilasnos. Right. It's a din d'oraisa. It is not. I've occasionally heard, you know, people talk to me, Rabbanim even talk to me, you know, question, Gioris d'oraisa Rabbanim? It's like, no. Gioris is d'oraisa. It's the definition of a zona. Gioris shivcha, a Gioris mishachares, and shneval bilasnos. Okay, so then that's the din of the Mishnah. Two dinim here. The first group of the Mishnah are not b'cheskas pesula. The second group of the Mishnah might be, but kam le b'derav amine. All right. Fine. I think maybe we'll stop here. And please, tomorrow, please, I just want to make one appeal. I know this is an appeal that is not...